I am calling this Polaris regular meeting to order. It is 1:30 on February 15th, 2019. Happy belated Valentine's Day to some of you, and happy belated Galentine's Day to the rest of us. I'm going to ask Anna Lair, Ms. Anna Lair, who happens to be a board member from Culver City, to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Please put your right hand on your heart.
Ready? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Excellent. Next order of business is approval of the agenda. Is there a motion?
So moved. Second.
Discussion? All in favor of the agenda?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Next item is approval of the minutes from our January meeting. Do I have a motion?
So moved. Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. We actually have two public speakers. Number one public speaker, Ted Nelson. You can tell us your organization for the few people who don't know. Did they tell you how to dance before you spoke?
No. Ted Nelson, thank you very much. Ted Nelson. I'm Assistant Budget Director for the Los Angeles Unified School District with responsibility for the Adult Ed Division, as well as the Early Childhood Division. And I just wanted to speak in regards to agenda item 4.1 budget, and just kind of share our budgeting process that we have in LU 5. First, I want to say this is the standard or normal operating procedure that we use in LU 5, whether it's adult ed schools, childhood schools, or K-12 schools. And we are currently like 3 months deep into our budget development process for our budget for next year. We are in the middle of preparing and finalizing all of our documents. In fact, next Monday we have our first meeting to meet with the administrators to lay out our summer school program and provide them with instructions. We are constantly monitoring our budget, and in particular, one of the things that we do is to look at what we have for next year as far as our budgeting goes, and perhaps more importantly, what we don't have. And and then make plans accordingly. For example, a year ago when we were going through this process, it became apparent that we would not have enough funding, and therefore we made a decision to use a substantial portion of one-time funds to be able to make this year kind of go. And of course, one-time funds, those funds are not available for next year. And so we are having to make reductions in our adult academic program, and it's in all areas. In operations, it's in the office, in the school offices, and regrettably, in the number of teacher hours that are available for us to use, so that we can stay fiscally stable. In addition to our budget development process, we also have to make adjustments in the current year. An example, everyone's familiar with the LA teacher strike. I think everybody heard about that. And early on in the negotiations last fall, in the direction that it was heading, it became apparent to us that we needed to make sure we had enough financial resources to cover the particular pay raises. We made several decisions, which including putting a freeze on top all hiring and any vacancies that occurred, and other adjustments in order to make sure that we would be able to have enough money. And as a result, you know, the negotiations concluded, and it did come to fruition, and they have implemented those, and we do have enough funding for that. Another example is, it became apparent, one of the critical things that we need is the adult student information system. And in looking at what our resources are next year, we realized we did not have enough funding for next year. So we went to the chief financial officer, and we reached an agreement where he would loan us the funding to cover the expenditures for next year, with the agreement that we would pay them back over time. So we are, you know, constantly monitoring, and we're like everybody else. We can always use more money, but we understand our fiduciary responsibility to stay fiscally solid. And we've had to make a lot of really hard choices. Hard choices in particular, you know, next year we're going to get a lot of reductions. But in order to maintain that, we are very grateful for the cost of living increase. That helped us get part of the way back, but not quite all the way back. So I just wanted to share that perspective of kind of what LA Unified does in their budget development process. It begins way, you know, in October, November, and decisions are made, and we finalize those decisions, and we are days away from shipping out the documents and giving the instructions to the administrator. So
speaker number two, Michelle Cohen, and Lorena Soria.
Okay, so I'm picking off my teacher advisor hat, so I'm UCLA hat. And I just want to say, to follow up on some of the comments about the budget. Of course, UCLA is a priority by the director and students, and we strongly believe in it. Counseling piece of this plan, we really want to cut as little as possible from counseling. We've just gotten started to make it better, and we need to see what that is. And then about the budget picture for the consortium as a whole, yeah, we're all in the same boat. We're all dealing with not enough money. But I think that the word efficiency, as we mentioned earlier, is sort of a top-notch word. But I think that by us, meaning the five districts in Merritt, working together, really seeing us as one instead of five, of course we're going to be more efficient, which would probably lead to more money being freed up to serve our students. And that's all I have to say. I look forward to studying and moving ahead.
Program updates, and we have innovation and best practices. Today we have a presentation from Burbank Unified School District, their IBT and ESL information and communication occupation. Please welcome my good friend, Fred Reba.
Should I get the clicker from you?
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well, the machine was here decided to update itself right now, so I'm now switching to PCS. I start. So let me start. Okay, let's do this. My name is Fred Rivas. I come from the Burbank Adult School. It isn't every day that you get to talk to a distinguished audience like you guys, professionals, and it puts the pressure, right? Well, I have a rule in the classroom, and I tell the students, relax, right? I want to change it here. I'm going to tell you, don't relax, because you might fall asleep, right? So sometimes the subject is a little bit dry. In this case, it isn't. It's actually very, very exciting. So it isn't also every day that you get to talk in front of two former principals of yours and one current principal, right? So Joseph Stark was my principal at the Burbank Adult School. And Veronica, of course, of the West Valley Professional. Here it is. All right, we're ready. Take a look at that, okay? ESL, Information and Communications Occupations, and this is the spring 2019. We started this last semester during the fall 2018. Okay, it's a new program. It's exciting. I'm really, really glad that I have been part of it because it's actually very innovative. It puts two teachers in the same classroom to teach this group of students. Now, let me tell you about what the objectives of this program is. The objectives here are to actually take our students who are ESL of the level 4, 5, and 6 and take them into the real world. So make it a smooth transition from their learning environment to the real world. And what do they need in order to function correctly nowadays? Right? We're talking about the present. Well, what they need is something that everybody in every single aspect of life is needing now. And that is technical language. Okay? You just see what happens here. I was sitting there, I see that the thing goes into an upgrade, right? Updating. And I'm like, oh my God. Right? And I'm a techie, so I give for the techies. Right? That's like, you know, oh, are we going to be able to do it, or am I going to have to improvise? And that's where the old school comes in. And I didn't even call it old school, because I come from there. But I have to improvise, right? Because that's where that comes out. Because we put our hopes and our, you know, all our technical knowledge is put to use to present the subject. But if I can't get that computer to work, or my microphone drops out, then I need to project my voice the old-fashioned way, right? From the diaphragm, boom, let's do it. So, let me call your attention to this. Information and Communications Occupation, Spring 2019. Can we move to it? There you have it, okay? We're trying to make it as lively as possible for the students to understand what the program is. And there is a very famous phrase here, yes, you can. And I point to English because that's the language of this country. Every single person that comes or migrates to our country should know that this is a must. Now, your point of departure can be any language of the world. And in my case, my point of departure was Spanish from El Salvador. So that's kind of a different Spanish, right? Because it's different everywhere you go. So but that was my point of departure here. So it was all set up, right? If you read that, which, you know, technically we're not supposed to read for you, right? The PowerPoint is there so you can read it. But let's do it. With the need of English for specific purposes in the technical and service areas, very important, service areas, vocabulary and learning strategies are the most important factors for student success. You can bet on that. The language, the vocabulary has to be there. Otherwise, you're going to be spinning your wheels. Right? People are going to be talking and they're not going to understand. So we need to get it to that point. Yeah. Okay. Now I'm in charge. Where is it? There we go. The first. Now I gotta tell you this. Every single one of these slides is actually an attempt to get those learning outcomes. Every single slide actually develops into a full-blown lesson. So we have a bunch of PowerPoints that systematically. But not rigid. When I say systematically but not rigidly, I'm applying the new concept. It's going to be, the new concept is called logic and digital logic, which means everything is in order, but it is in disorder. So we can actually mix them up. But the first one is tools and safety. What are we aiming for, you know, a lesson on tools and safety? Well, computer technician needs proper tools to work safely and prevent damage to computer equipment. It also needs to know electrical safety practices. So we start with the tools, and there's plenty of vocabulary that a person can benefit from. And it opens up this gate where they can actually go and work at a place where this is done, like an IT department in any computer company or any other company. Help is not isolated. It's the computers are there. I'm going to say, let's do it. Okay. Basic electronics is another lesson where we take advantage of this. Now, bear in mind that these are not meant to get a technician, right? Or to create a technician. That's a different deal. This is only to introduce the student to the language, okay? To make him aware that once he walks into that situation, he's going to be bombarded by technical words that are going to come his or her way, and we need to be able to understand that, okay? So, learning the basics of voltage, current, resistance, and power. The difference between AC and DC will be more than enough. A person knowing that will be way ahead of the competition. Okay? The other part of the basic electronics lesson is the analog signal and the digital signal. This is our world right here. But that is what we do when we process the signals through our systems. Motherboards. Okay, every single computer-based equipment or piece of equipment, and you have them with you. You have cell phones, you have computers, tablets, everything is computer-based because it's got a microprocessor. So if it's got a microprocessor, that microprocessor has to be installed in what we call a backplane. This is very technical now. Backplane is another word for motherboard. And that little box you see right there, that's where it goes, okay? That's where the microprocessor sits, which is the heart of the whole operation. Hard drives and solid-state memory, another part that has to be addressed because we're all using these gadgets here. Okay, we have solid-state memory devices. Like I said, this is a very, very dry subject, but if we can make it appealing, they should be able to get the benefits by understanding the lingo. Magnetic and solid state media. This is very popular too. That's a memory stick. It goes inside your computer. And many times it's related to the speed of the device. You know, many people think it's the microprocessor and it's the hard drive, but wrong, right? It's an optimization of the microprocessor with the RAM or the memory. So students have to learn about that, and there's plenty of words to use. Printers. This is an animal on its own. Types of printers, choosing a printer, connection and setup of a printer, troubleshooting. It's a fertile ground to actually get and harvest all these words that are going to be given to our students, making their vocabulary a rich vocabulary in technical terms. I'm talking technical. They also must learn to help the client explore different types of printers. What should I buy? What is right for me? How about my company? What should I buy now for my company? All that helps us tell the student or help prepare the student to actually process this language a little better. Wait. Cables and networking. Now this is my cup of tea because I'm an expert on infrastructure. So cables and networking. Learn how a technician terminates, tests, and troubleshoots network cables. Actually, that's the word to be learned there because every one of you either connects to the Wi-Fi or connects to the network via a wire. Now, here's one thing that you must understand. In the bank, you can't connect via Wi-Fi. They're not allowed. Why do you think it's that?
Security reasons.
Security reasons, right? That's right. What's more secure, the Wi-Fi or the wire?
Wi-Fi.
Obviously the wire. Yes, definitely. So they're not allowing these people to actually conduct business on the Wi-Fi. They have to connect the wire. So that's something super important for a student to know. And there's countless words in there that has to be, you know, the student has to familiarize himself with it. Oh, I couldn't help it. I put my picture.
That's narcissism, I think. Multimedia, right? That's the word that everybody's using nowadays. Multimedia. It is multimedia. That's media, media, media. But no one can tell you what media really is. Right, and that's the way it is here in LA. These words come out and everybody's using them. But a definition of it is hard to get. So, why the term multimedia? Well, simple. Take a look at this, right? You can actually create, import, store, retrieve, edit, delete audio, video, and text information. That's a tall order right there. Because you are all creating all these documents. Okay, every day that you come to the office, every day you come to the school. So the students must be familiar with these words. Okay? Wireless, every aspect of wireless, because it's very popular, and for convenience, not for security. We don't like it. Technicians don't like wireless. They do not like it because it's the weakest link in the chain. So we like the wire, okay? So they learn how this works. And the words are going to be of the benefit. Now, I'd like to tell you about this because along with the technical language, we include in this course the customer service and support representative, okay? So the customer service and support center person has to learn many of the aspects of dealing with the public, dealing with clients. Clients are difficult to deal with. Let's use the right word. The right word is the public. And how is the public? Is the public nice? Bear in mind that we are the public, right? And sometimes our emergency is not their emergency. And they better be trained to handle that. Now, this course will actually train the student to become a customer service representative. And that is the certificate that they will earn at the end of the course. Now, this actually caused some unpredicted actions on behalf of the students. Because if you read the original title of the course, it's ESL. So we're appealing to those ESL students from 4th level, 5th level, 6th level. But now we're having the native speakers joining the class. From this second time we offered it, we offered a pilot last semester. This time we're getting a lot of people that are native speakers. So what is that? It's because of this. So the role of the customer service representative, we have to be sure that they understand that. What is their job? What do they do? Here comes something super important. The core customer service representative values. What is it at the center of these individuals handling all these calls, you know, in a call center or face-to-face with a customer? Okay? These are learning outcomes. As you can see, I keep reminding myself that these are learning outcomes because we need to get this under the belt. Essential elements for communicating with the customers. This is important, and this is our weakest link. No matter what people tell you, when somebody talks to you and talks to you in a certain tone of voice, it has an effect on you. If you are fragile, you're going to crack. And you know it. It has to do with what your mental state is and what your mental condition is. So we're going into really, really touchy areas. But it is doable because this is where the need is. Communication essentials. Active listening. Can you listen to me rather than waiting to talk? Some people have a hard time doing that, right? Including myself. But I have to force myself to listen. Voice component. How do you talk? How do you modulate your voice? Hi, honey. Right? Or, what did you do to the computer? What does that, what kind of an effect does that have on a wife? And that's the first thing I do. Right? Fred, check it out. Something's happening. What did you do? I didn't do anything. Right? The defensive mode, immediately. Okay? Voice components, effective word choices for written and verbal communication. Let's face it, we sometimes fail miserably at choosing our words, right? Whether they're written or verbally spoken. Sometimes we do it, and then it doesn't take long. 5-10 minutes later, we're like, gosh, I wish I would have said something different. right? It's part of our environment, it's part of our lives. Effective cross-cultural communication. Now, this is touching right there, because we are a diverse population. We got people from all over the world. We got people from all different social extractions. I would say socio-economic extractions. So we need to pay attention to that specifically. Troubleshooting and incident management is something that they have to get good at it. And as you can see, it's time to turn into Sherlock Holmes, right? We have to go out there and find out what is the problem. So the incident management process has to be well learned by this individual. Troubleshooting and problem solving. Problem solving more than problem causing, right? Once you're in the problem, once you're in trouble, then you've got two choices. Either become part of the problem or become part of the solution. And I think that that's why we're here. Because we are part of a solution. Because we are in trouble. Otherwise, this wouldn't exist. If everything was hunky-dory, right? But we're here for a reason. We're here to find a way through. That's it. So we have a problem to solve. Now, customer management skills cannot be expressed any other way. It is a ladder, and we go from poor, average, good, very good, to excellent. We want to be at the top. Excellent. That's where we want to be. And the students have to recognize that. This is training. So challenging customer behaviors. Bad behavior customers, right? Like, why are you getting that thing ready? Right? So that would be, you know, my bad attitude. Managing customer behavior. Okay, what do you do? What do you do when you get confronted with something like that? Emotional intelligence. This is my favorite. We're always worried about what? IQs, right? But EQ? Not even considered. So we need to touch on that with these students. And give them all the elements of becoming a very well-balanced, emotional, intelligent person. Expressing empathy. We have to relate to them. They got a problem. So we have to try to understand what or how would it feel to be in their shoes. Stress management. You have to do something about that because you're going to be right in the middle of the storm. Okay? So we include that, of course. Certificate of completion. Instructors monitor student progress on a continuing basis. Every single one of these lessons comes with an evaluation, written and verbal. So both areas are going to be tested, okay? Technical service representative certificate is what they're going to obtain at the end of this course, okay? I wrote this because I think it's relevant. I actually didn't write it, but Benjamin Franklin did. But I'm taking credit for this, right? Tell me and I forget. Teach me and I may remember. Involve me and I learn. And that's our objective. It's for them to learn. If we're not getting for them, you know, to learn the stuff, then we're failing. Okay? We need to get it prepared. So, now it's your turn. Questions and answers. Do you have any questions?
Thank you. I do have a question. How long is that course?
Good question. All right. Well, we first intended to run it for 14 weeks, but we ended up running it for 12 weeks. And that's because it was a pilot. We had certain constrictions with time. That's how we're doing it,
Brian. So, if I started at 9 to 12, was it every day, or...?
No, it's once a week, every Friday, and we put it on Friday. We actually, we did it on Friday because we don't want to interfere with their ESL schedule, which is normally from Monday through Thursday.
So all these students have an ESL class and they take this class.
Exactly. Anybody else? Wow. No questions, huh? It's almost like my classroom.
share a little bit. So you're obviously quite a showman and an experienced teacher. However, you entered into a forced marriage. Share a little bit what your co-teaching or team teaching experience has been.
Awesome. Okay, now teaching with another teacher in the classroom is somewhat
strange situation for most of us educators. And here's one thing that's going to tap on emotional intelligence. Most teachers are territorial. Let's face it. The room is set up to your liking. And if somebody does something to change that, what happens? Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have trouble, baby. Okay? Now, that's a problem. That is a problem because that is going to cause friction as we try to collaborate in teaching the students. So one of them always take it up and being the alpha. It's my classroom, you're the visitor, so I run the show. You would think that, you know, as far as, let's say, intellectuals, that would be a solved problem, right? You would think that by going to school, going to high school, getting on to college and university, you will be well prepared in emotionally handling yourself in a kind of situation like this, right? But no, don't bet on it. It doesn't happen. The moment somebody walks into that perimeter, you become somebody else. So here's what happens. He says to me, well, there's going to be another teacher there. It's going to be an ESL teacher. You're going to be the CTE person. I'm like, perfect. No problem. So, but I had some preference. I didn't tell any of you how I was cheating a little bit, right? I was sharing my classroom already with another instructor who is totally different. Couldn't be anybody more different, you know, but we're great friends and we work together. So, is it possible? Absolutely. Now that I am coupled with an ESL teacher, right? We started discerning a way to actually do the double tag team on the students, right? Sort of like, you know, WWF, right? Here we go, boom! And I get it, and we actually alternate. Say that again? No, I wasn't. I mean, not physically, but academically, there you go. Academically, by all means, yes, we just go there, and I do a word, I do, this is what I use, right, a PowerPoint, and then Mr. Balahi will go to the board and write the words and say, well, you know what this is, and then elaborate. Remember that he has the opportunity to cover the etymology of the word, you know, the meaning, what part of speech, all that stuff is there. All his knowledge is being used to clarify all of this information. One thing about it, though, you really don't realize how many idiomatic expressions you use when you really talk to people, right? And then after a while, you go, well, wait a minute, you know, I got your back, I said. And the students look at you with blank stare, right? Like, what the heck is that? And then Mr. Flying will come in and say, hey, hold it, yeah, I got it. That's the way we play it. And it's working really, really well. The dynamics inside that classroom are fantastic. Now, I gotta tell you this, and the reason the video asked me to elaborate on that is because it doesn't really work in all cases. Sometimes we have to smooth things up. We have to call the team, right, and say, hey, we need to do this, 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 and that. It's the hardest part, to tell you the truth, because of the way we view things. I have to sit down and instead tell people, well, none of this stuff is ours. It all belongs to the district. Right? So that computer is not yours. Techies know that the first thing they do when we assign a computer is they personalize it, don't they? Well, they should. Did I answer your question? Anybody else?
Yes. How do the ESL students do in terms of the vocabulary?
I'm sorry, can I get a little closer so I can hear you?
Sure. How do the ESL students do with the vocabulary, the jargon, pronouncing those words, and their cap in terms of the language learners, do they have to be at a certain level?
Yes, definitely. If we look at the ESL students, I'm sorry, let me go back. If we look at the ESL students, we are targeting three top levels, right? In hopes that they have enough under their belt from their ESL only to be able to handle this new load that is being put on this student, okay? So, yeah, we do have that. However, like I said, it worked with ESL students. They showed up, right? But now we're having native speakers joining the class. And I got a feeling that it's not because of the ESL, because you know they're native speakers, but it's because of the other part, which is the customer service representative. Yes.
So, how is the interaction between the two different populations, right? The native speakers and the ESL speakers, two different populations?
Excellent question.
How does that work?
You know that, Richard? An ESL student waited for me this last session, and she said to me, "Mr. Rivas, I think I'm in the wrong place." And I said, "Well, why do you say that?" And she says, "Well, because these guys are very advanced, and I'm only on the fifth level of ESL." I said, "No, it is actually meant for you. It was designed for you. This is something of an extra bonus, you know, having these guys. But I'm going to tell you something. Anytime you put an ESL student along with a native speaker, the ESL student is going to benefit from that. It's guaranteed. I can learn a language by just, you know, burying my head in books. I have to jump in. I have to go and talk to people. And people laugh at you when you mispronounce a word, or your accent is so pronounced that, you know, it's obvious where you come from. That's intimidating. So when you see native speakers, you know, talking in the classroom, and you are an ESL student, well, imagine that. How would you feel? We are very touchy that way. If there's somebody who knows more about technology, and I'm kind of iffy about it, what does that cost? Right? Well, maybe I should sit next to this guy. I'm a little really bad. You know? So, precisely, you know, what happened in that platform. So, we're trying to smooth that out and say, no, don't retreat. These guys here are going to help you advance. Because you're going to listen to them, you're going to talk, you know, and we have them no level. So, it is a benefit for them.
Thank you.
Okay, did I run out of time? Because I can talk better. Thank you very much.
I actually have one brief question. What was the learning curve like for your ESL teacher?
For the ESL?
Teacher. Like, what was that like for the ESL teacher getting into the CTE realm? How did you find the teacher, their ability to absorb that information and help the ESL students?
Well, it was a learning experience for him. And he expressed it to me and says, "Fred, I'm learning a lot about technology, right? Things that I didn't know." But what he didn't know is that I was learning a ton of things about ESL myself. Because I'm not an ESL teacher, I'm an ESL product. Right? That's what I am. I'm the product of ESL programs. But I'm not an ESL teacher. Which brings me to, you know, it's kind of funny the way it goes, because I forget. And what I do is I put the pedal to the metal because I'm used to native speakers. So here we go, boom, you know, motherboards, boom, right? And they're struggling, and then I go back and I try to bring them back to speed. But the thing is, with the ESL students, I can't do that. I have to put the brakes. And he reminds me of that. Slow, they're not understanding. So it's a learning experience for both of us, actually. Okay, well, thank you very much. Thank you for your time, okay?
So, Larry, office update, Justin and Michelle.
Good afternoon. All right, so, as you may recall, the LARIC office staff was tasked with, and you'll find this information on your handout, LARIC office staff was tasked with giving you monthly updates on our activities and progress we were making on projects. I'll direct your attention briefly to projects associated with the annual plan. When you look at the handout, we've highlighted the areas that progress was made. You'll see that highlighted in yellow. Thank you, page 16 specifically. It'll be page 16 and 17. The first update is regarding activities under the annual plan, PD survey. As you may be aware, the ABE-ASC SME group did meet on February 7th. They did speak specifically about PD that they'd like to see implemented. On page 17, if you look under Professional Development Framework, you'll see highlighted that ASE ABE SME Networking Group. Again, that did meet on February 7th. From what I understood, it was a very, very productive meeting. Next, I'm very excited on the governance research to report that Michelle and I will be presenting at the CCAB State Conference. Information on our governance research, we're right in the middle of vetting all of that information before we present it. We do that in our spare time on weekends and late at night. Michelle.
Were the only three things that we worked on. Those are just the three things that happened to be on the chart that moved to a new category. So,
thank you.
We did do more. The next thing on the list was LERC team recommendations. At the last board meeting, we presented you with a big, giant, long spreadsheet full of tasks that we were being tasked with. And one of the questions the board asked is, this is a really big list. What can we do to help you to fill out all those tasks? So we thought about it and we put together a list for you. It's in your packet. It's under agenda item. Actually, it's on page 19. Page 19.
So on page 19, there's some items. There are three items. So what might help us on the board is, first of all, thank you for bringing this forward. Are these items, how would you prioritize these items? Are these like, hey, you know what, we got to get to this right away? Is this something we can address through the planning cycle? Guide us in that sense, because if it's something where, hey, we got to get on this right away because it's impeding the work in some way, or, you know, then we might want to think about, is it a board workshop? Do we, you know, just kind of help us in terms of prioritizing these issues?
So with these three, we kind of looked at, like, what are those three main things that don't relate to one particular task, but kind of in general impact all of the tasks that we've been given to do. So one of the top things on there is maintain a fully staffed LERC office. So right now we are currently without a secretary, and so much of our time is taking up doing those kind of duties between Justin and I. We also talked about, you know, looking at all the directives that are on our task list and coming up with what are your priorities. So we write everything down and we frantically work to try to move them, but it's like, what are the things that are most important to you on that list so that we can do those first? The second, number two, has come up a number of times. We did a presentation about the governance and the roles and responsibilities. It's come up multiple times in the point person team meetings too. It's taking some time with the board and the PPT and really kind of deciding, like, what are each player's roles and responsibilities? Do we need to add more players to the team? Like, what does that look like? So it's kind of a conversation that hasn't fully happened yet. That would be very helpful for us as well. And then the last one on there said streamline communication, increase engagement. One of the things we're most excited about is getting as many of our players involved. We're super engaged in the conference right now and the Innovation Awards, which has been lots of fun because it deals with all these teachers from the field, from community college, from all the different players, and we've had a great time interacting with people with those two things. And we want to try to keep that ball rolling. And you know, with staff development or the SME groups or the three-year planning, but we want to try to figure out how do we keep that ball rolling and how do we create this communication link between what we're doing in the office and with the field level. But sometimes things don't always get all the way down to the school sites.
So the big thing for us is really to push that engagement, because we really, really want, I think, we feel what we do is important. We want everybody to know about it and be involved.
To add to what has already been said, in terms of priorities, selfishly, obviously, one would be one of those priorities. The whole idea is an issue of efficiency, right? You know, we should have the right people do the right jobs. so that we can be as efficient as we possibly can. The next one that could happen simultaneously is that number three, streamline communications to increase engagement. And this is really trying to address something that we have recognized, that a lot of times, for whatever reason, information doesn't get to the field. And so we want to try to add that additional buzz out in the field so that people are aware as to a number of activities that are taking place and that may involve them.
Right.
Defined roles and responsibilities, I think that that could be part of the three-year planning. However, I think that the sooner that we address these issues, the better off that we're gonna be. I mean, you know, I think that Gayla did a wonderful job today guiding us through this process. I would imagine that she would do just a wonderful job guiding us through the process of reviewing, roles, responsibilities, so on and so forth. We've tried. We've done a lot of work on this, and these are difficult topics to address. And I think that sometimes a third party may be very helpful in helping us understand how much more in agreement we are than we may think. Right, and I really seriously think that we are more in agreement than not.
That really helps a lot. I appreciate that. I'd like to just, again, I'll just throw this out to, well, first of all, I want to make sure that Madam Chair is okay to do some discussion around this now, or should we wait until later?
We should have
the
discussion
as
the topic.
So one idea would be to utilize maybe our existing meeting structure to maybe add, I don't know if it's possible, can we add a little time and maybe utilize Gayla? I don't know if that means there's scope creep there, or we gotta, not to give her more work to do, but maybe we could utilize some of that existing time to tackle some of these and then come to some resolutions, because I think obviously the board wants to support your work and get you some clarity on these issues, I would say, as soon as possible. So that would be my recommendation.
I'd like to share how completely impressed, and I want to say this very sincerely, but I'm so proud of the work that you do. When I look at this report, it's just amazing how you're able to very concisely, but very effectively and visually communicate information here in these couple of pages, and even with your staff recommendations, because admittedly we have other jobs, but this is written so that very quickly we can read it and process it. So thank you very much for all the work you do.
And I was actually going to say something similar. I love this dashboard approach. It's easy to see, it's easy to grasp, so I too would agree with it. How he said. And I also think that what the first said makes sense as well. I mean, to the degree that we can help make your jobs more efficient and more effective by either providing greater clarity or direction or whatever we need to do, we should do that. But again, everything should be focused on our planning process. I think Gayla did an excellent job this morning of taking us through some complex stuff in a relatively quick way. And along the way, she made sure that we A, engaged, and B, that we all had plenty of time to do that. So if we use that same method with some of the things that you are talking about, and things that we should start with getting to, it made sense. So congratulations to everybody for this. Of all these things, and I apologize, I'm back and forth to a board member, so I know I shouldn't do that. But crisis always needs to be. So maybe this is spoken to, but of all the things that that you list here under your staff recommendations, which has got the highest priority in your mind? What do you think is the one that we're going to need to work on maybe before anything else?
I think that having a prioritized list of what you expect from the LERIC office would be number one on the list.
Thank you.
That way we can address your needs, your concerns, you know, promptly and specifically.
So it's the second bullet under item one.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
So I think that the idea of Cindy Gala to move us forward, I think, is amazing. Our next meeting is not until March 15th, and it is full with all the stuff around planning, I think. So logically to me, whatever comes out of that meeting will really drive what we need to do next. I think there's, I can't imagine, I know me personally, there's no way that I can figure out how to carve that time out between now and then, but I think that really, we'll have a really good sense of the direction, and that may change what our priorities. I would need to create the list of priorities, and then that whole three-year planning process shifted, so I wouldn't even want to.
And let me add this, if I may, please. Spending most of my life as staff, right, whether it's to my chancellor, or to the board, or whatever, I often go to my chancellor or even the board members and say, look, here's a laundry list of 12 things. Based upon what I know about what we're supposed to be doing as a paid professional doing this, you know, 50, 60 plus hours a week, these are the priorities that I think you as my chancellor or you as the board need to be focusing on. So it shouldn't be us telling you guys all the time what we think you should be doing. It's pretty much what you should be telling us what needs to be done, because you live it, you breathe it on a constant basis. Now we get to consider that, we get to make some decisions about that, but I know, and again, I'm not focused on this 60 hours a week, I'm focused on this maybe an hour or two a week, and the rest of it is a lot of other things. So that would be helpful too.
So, can I? Sure. So, as we look at these priorities and the things that you have on there, now that we have the conversation about what's happening with Gala in the next few weeks, should we bring this conversation back on the 15th, or are you seeing stuff that needs to happen between now and then?
Given that roles and responsibilities and looking at, like, I just want to see how does the roles and responsibilities, do we need to add staff, and are there extra players that need to be at the table? How does that fit into our plan? I guess it's a conversation that might be interesting to look at. Like, I know we're going to have goals and what our targets are, but is there more of the structure of learning that also needs to be in the plan for what we're going to do in the next 3 years?
And from my perspective, I need to know what we're going to do in the next 3 years to determine what kind of staffing support we would even need. So I couldn't imagine figuring the staffing support prior to what the details are.
So maybe I agree with my colleagues. Like, so maybe between now and the 15th, you kind of take a look at it, and you kind of put a short list for us to look at. And if there are any questions, you know, we can weigh in until then, just to kind of help, you know, in terms of coming back on Tuesday, hitting the ground running. And then I agree, after we get a better sense of what the scope is going to be with our plan, that'll help drive the discussion, I think, in the other areas.
And not to mention that besides this three-year planning stuff, you guys are all focused on the March 9th LARIC conference. So I'm like, what else? We hear you loud and clear, a lot of stuff, and so right now, not adding one more thing.
Okay, yes, and in the meantime, we meet every day, right? So we can actually come up with some suggestions and communicate them to you via email. We don't have to meet for that. And just, you know, to get the process of thinking about these things started, we'll be more than happy to do that.
Well, and Len? So since you have the mic,
you're
going to let us know about the state auditor's correspondence.
That is correct.
So if we are going to engage at page 12 to do this extra additional review. It's outside of the normal three-year planning process, so that would be an additional scope of work that would have to be addressed.
I agree. And again, let's see what they come up with, and then we can kind of figure out what level where we need for it. Thank you.
Thank you. The next item is the State Auditor's correspondence to Derek. Basically, I just want to make everyone aware that there is a report that is generated by the State Auditor's Office. Since the items, the recommendation that they have provided Derek are still partially completed and not fully completed, then we are part of this report that is making the legislature. I just wanted to make you aware and the public aware of that, and there is a link here to the report provided on the page 21 of the handout as well. That's all I have to say about that.
Thank you, Lance and Larry Stout.
Thank you.
Moving
on, we have we actually have COLAB, and quite frankly, that item was misplaced in the agenda. That is a budget issue that Grace is going to cover shortly.
So Grace, you're sitting back there and can't see you.
Good afternoon. If you refer to page 23 of your handout, we had included there the historical allocations for adult ed. So for fiscal year 20, we are estimating that we will receive a 3.46% COLA. So out of our current allocation of 127, out of the 127,128,000, that would be an additional of about 4.4 million. So that would bring the total estimated allocation for fiscal 20 to 131,527,000.
You have the next piece, right? That is the question.
Yes. I have some more.
Okay.
And then we have some updates on data and accountability as of September 30, and as well as the progress and expense reporting. So this is a snapshot of our data and accountability program. Please note that the budget of 5,068,000 is not correct, because I had some footing error there. It should be, our total budget should be 4,680,853, and out of that 4.68 million budget, we have spent about 2.3 million. So the balance is about 2,371,000, or an estimated of 50.66%. So it should be 41.75. And this fund has to be spent by June 30, 2019. The next slide is a snapshot of our Q1 for EEP fund. So out of the 146 million, we have spent about 22 million, which represents about 15%. And we have included as well here the corrective action plan for the district that did not meet this target.
This is the same thing that we've been allowed in the presentation.
So, you know, again, I just want to make sure these pieces of record here that the spending is on the basis of the state allocation timing and model. So effectively you get 2 to 3 years for each funding cycle to spend the money. So at least you could say that we have it, and at the end of the quarter report that there's still more to go.
Well, and I think what this data is 4 months old.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, because the way it closes and the time it has to report it and the time of the cycle, I think, well, I don't know how to address it, but
can't hang your hat on say it. Well, 4.5 months old, from September 30th, it was reported it closed to November 30th. We didn't have a September meeting. There's a big gap in what was reported and what's in real time. I think that's important to know.
So quarter one, just for clarification, quarter one is July 1 to September 30th. So I just because ours is the lowest, right? And so my under collective action, I'm clear, there's an expectation of 15% spending by quarter, and my explanation is just that.
Well, but is there an expectation of 15% spending by quarter to that state using 3 years to spend?
My explanation that
makes the 15% explanation.
Well, that came into play after the budget was allocated. So it's a simple explanation. The plan is built as it's using the runway. The state has changed the rules. It gave us 2.5 years. There was no mandated per quarter spending. That came into effect later. We're reporting data. It looks like especially our district has a large balance, so that's going to be effectively. But the data is a snapshot in time from 4 months ago, and it doesn't take into effect.
You don't want to belabor the point. I just want to get the point on the record. The definition of effectively is also for the date as well. So what we're doing is I do want to go back to the state auditor's question.
The next slide. This is the LARIC office budget. So for fiscal year 2019, we started off with some carryover of about $276,000 with the current allocation of $855,000. So the total budget is about $1,014,000. As of December 31, we had spent about $295,000 on personnel, and other non-personnel expenses of about $23,000 plus the indirect cost of $50,000 for a total of $334,568, and the balance as of December is about $806,000. We're projecting additional expenses of about $585,000, which is comprised of personnel and other expenses between January to June. So that we're the projected ending balance for LARIC would be around $220,000. On the next slide, we have the upcoming deadlines. So today is the deadline for the fiscal year 18 program area report. The consortium has to certify that data today. For AED funds, the Q2 progress and expense report is due by March 1st, and it has to be certified by March 31st. March 1st is also the deadline for data and accountability expense reporting, which would cover from June 1st of 2016 to December 31st of 2018. And the preliminary allocations for fiscal year 20 and 21 is scheduled to be released by February 28th. On the next slide, we just want to bring this up again about capital outlay. Because in reviewing the budgets that were submitted, I noticed that the capital outlay line, each district had budgeted some dollars in capital outlay. And today, there's only one district that had presented their plan to the LARIC board. So this is the response that we got from the state regarding capital outlay. The state doesn't approve this request, but we do ask that you send us an informational email in case we have questions. If you had run this capital improvements by your consortium members, and they are in agreement, and they are solely for the benefit of the adult S7 program areas, then I would save the minutes of that meeting and make sure you post this in your 1819 budget and work plan, as it connects to the 1819 annual plan strategy. If those things are completed, then you can move forward.
Can I ask a clarifying capital outlay question?
Yes. And that, would those be dollar amounts that would show up in object code 6,000 or 7,000? So if it's not a 6,000 or 7,000, then it's not in your capital outlay.
7,000?
Oh, yeah, 6,000. Okay. So to clarify, thank you, sir. So to clarify then, there has to be an email that goes to the CAP, is it CAPE now? CAPE office?
Yes.
Okay, because when I did that before, the response I got back is, thanks, but really you need to run that through your consortium. So I'm a little confused with this slide, because you're talking about, do they still want that email or not? Because that's not the response I got back.
So, we're trying to understand what the policy of the CAPE office is. Because we're in the same boat as you are. Last time we sent something to them, we got the same reply, right? And in addition to that, we got this reply that says that capital plan capital outlay expenditures should be vetted through executive team, and then once that takes place, the state wants to know that we have the consortium has approved something in terms of capital outlay. That's our current understanding of where we're at.
Okay, so this is just me. I don't know how my colleagues feel about this. We all know that LAUSD submitted a report on capital outlay. So that's the district that submitted the report. Let's put it on the table.
That is correct.
Okay. What I would like then to ask is it possible for us to create a template, or do we want to follow that report's structure for all member districts to submit reports for capital outlay? And furthermore, do we want to go back to the prior year and ratify capital outlay expenditures for 17-18?
I believe that because the policy keeps evolving, it's probably not necessary for us to go back to last year. I think that what's important from the state, if I can read between the lines, the state just want to make sure that we are looking at basically, we have some sort of understanding as to what capital outlay expenditures are being made of. And if the consortium is okay with that, then the CAPE office is okay with that. It's basically what I get from the email. We'd be happy to share the template that we did. Feel free to use it, although it's not necessary. As a matter of fact, I think that the way we have to address this is an operational issue, and you know they're forcing it upon us to address it in the open meetings. I think the capital outlay should be handled as a consent agenda item, and you know as they come forward, you know we'll just take a quick look at it, check it off, and then move on with life. I think that one of the concerns that the CAPE office had, and this is historical knowledge, is they didn't want districts all of a sudden building, you know, 10-story buildings, that sort of thing, with funds that should be going mostly to student services and whatnot.
So if you could, just a personal favor to me, could you email me, you know, kind of like how you want that structured, so we can get that ready then for the future meeting for Burbank.
Absolutely, yeah. As a matter of fact, I'll share a template with everyone. Feel free to use it or not. You know, we understand you may already have something. You know, for whatever it's worth, we'll send it to everybody.
Thank you.
Sorry. So Dr. Miller, you wanted to come back to the audit.
Back to the audit thing. So, the letter that's in the packet is from Washington State Auditor, Ms. Elaine Cole. And what it points out, the second to last paragraph, is that they include recommendations in the Conference State Auditor's assessment of corrective action relative to certain they have taken to implement our recommendations. And then they go on the last paragraph, the second last paragraph. Our audit and investigative efforts bring the greatest return when the entity acts upon the findings of recommendations. Q4 is one being able to ensure that the state policymakers and managers are aware of steps of corrective action agencies and departments report they have taken. Further, we believe the state budget process is good off the end of last year's report. So they create this report. On pages 40 and 41 of the report, it speaks to what Montebello is doing and Larrick is doing. It's on the bottom of page 41, I believe, and it says partially implemented.
Yes.
So at the last meeting that I was at, I asked if we could find out, and I still would like you to, what consequences, if any, are part of this, although I tend to think that there aren't any directly related to this. But this is a source document that policymakers are going to get, and they're going to read that to be sad, and they're going to see what is or isn't happening. So I would suggest, and I know that you do as well, Nancy, that we do respond in some form or fashion as Larrick, and I know Montebello's working to do the same thing, because if we can proactively deal with this, or put a corrective action plan together that deals with it over time, we will be in a better place than just allowing legislators and staff members to react to this report, which doesn't necessarily show the efforts that have been done. In other words, we can't just let this slide and hope for the best, is what I think you're saying, correct?
Absolutely, yes. And so we've had, the consortium has had, in all the, there were a total of 32 recommendations on the original report that you are citing. Only two apply directly to Larrick. And so that is what our purview is. And as we focus on those, we had a 60-day opportunity.
Right. Let me just add, I apologize for interrupting.
Yes.
But one of those two relate to basically complete an assessment of Montebello Unified's ability to meet the requirements of the Tilt Education Plan. So there's an inextricable link, right, and between us and Montebello, and an exigency or emergency that we do work with Montebello to come up with a plan that works for them and us.
Correct.
Because there's an expectation that this consortium is going to do that. There's right there in writing, it says very clearly, they expect us to do that. So we have to do that.
That is correct.
Or not, but if we don't do anything about it, then whatever the gods determine is our fate will be our fate.
That is correct.
If I could just add a comment. So items number 41 and 42 have been addressed. So, I'm sorry, 31 and 32. And we have answered and acted upon it. So if you need to see a report,
well, yeah, I think
we have to respond together as a group.
Yeah, I think what we need to do is we need to see what you did, and then we, the board and staff, have got to figure out the best way to convey that information quickly as an addendum to this report dated January 28th, so that that corrective action is on the record.
Right, and so this report is based on the last response that we had to the state that was submitted back in November 2nd, which was the anniversary of when the report was originally released.
I understand that. Whoever the staff members are who are going to read this, they're not going to care about the names. They're just going to care about what's there. So if we have taken some corrective action after the November, we need to give an affirmative act, you know, responsibility to report that. So if nothing else, we can say, hey, you know, it's taking time, here's the answer. So if we have it, we should know what they are, agree upon them. And
so the latest report from the state indicates that this is an item that has not been resolved. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So the state is still expecting further action, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
And so what I think might be a good idea at this point is for the next open meeting or for the next regular board meeting, I will bring the history of all of the elements that we have reported to the state and their responses accordingly, right? Because we are the ones who have indicated to the state that we are in progress, that we haven't quite gotten there yet.
I think that's all good information, but I would really like to know what Montebello has done. And Montebello feels that they have complied, they have done what they need to do. We need to take that information and indicate that yes, and therefore Larrick has done what it needs to do, because we work with Montebello to get it done. So that the next time you look at this, we get a green dot that doesn't say, you know, there's red, not no action, yellow, partially implemented, and then green that says fully implemented. I would like fully implemented for item 31 and 32 of the 41 of this report. And then we are done with this. We can all get on with the
life. I just want to direct the board's attention to item number 32, is to do that the consortium develops processes, you know, regarding uniform procedures, attendance, and whatnot. And I believe that that's going to be addressed by the audits that are being conducted consortium-wide and within the consortium office. So I believe that's why it's partially implemented. And then item number 31, I think, is definitely the point well taken. And we should definitely put something together.
Part of this is we need, as I look at 32, I know for a fact that one of the key steps you've taken is you have contracted with ASAP, correct?
Yes.
And so that's where I go with Dr. Miller here and agree that these are the things we need to stipulate specifically in terms of what has taken place and you're reporting to this board about, so that we can go from yellow caution to green, you're okay, with regards to things such as enrollment and attendance. The other thing is that your ASAP, of course, is also how you're accounting for the fees that folks pay for programs, correct? For both your CTE and for your enrichment programs, and that's on here, expenditure data. So that, I think that getting that from you will then allow us to specifically respond to that. Now, Mr. Asturias, have we done that to the auditors? Have we been specific about the fact that Montebello has brought on, they were using a proprietary system before, and now they have used a system that is known throughout the state, such as ASAP?
Yes, all of the steps, all of the concrete steps that have been taken to address the issues noted on recommendations 31 and 32 have been reported.
Yeah, I don't understand either. So maybe that means that we need to appeal to the governor or go to the head, but basically say, we saw your write-up, but we believe we should be, this is how we should take, this is the prescriptive action that we take.
Right. One of the items that Merrick noted on the reports, this is going back to the 2 month, 60-day report, 6 month report, and 1 year report, is that Merrick was going to develop a funding formula that was fair and equitable.
That's not 32. 32 talks about, I wish we had a way to put this puppy up there. Ensure that state adult education funds are used in the most effective
efficient and effective manner, the consortium should, within 1 year, develop policies and procedures to ensure the proper collection and reporting of enrollment, attendance, and expenditure data by consortium members. We can easily do that because all of us have this, and we can cite that Montebello is now using ASAP. So on 32, it would not be yellow, it would be fully implemented.
Yes, it's fully implemented now that we have hired the auditing firms as part of the...
No, sir. I wish we could plug this up. Richard, can you get this up there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Specific in terms of to fix this, you need to do, right? So, and then so the evidence of that is whatever you're turning in. Hey, I fixed this, and here's the supporting evidence to prove it. So I guess we just kind of need to figure out where we are in that process. Are we clear, first of all, what the findings were, and then have we provided what we feel is satisfactory evidence to the state that we, in fact, have dealt with this issue?
And to that point, you know, in a normal audit, you've got a management discussion and MD&A, management discussion with the gentleman at that. MD&A, management discussion and what do you need for LAUSD? And normally you've got a year to take the corrective action. But in this case, this is a significant monkey on our back that. And that decisions are being made right now. This is not a formal audit per se. This is a review, it's a report.
Right.
So the sooner we get the corrective action in people's hands, the better off I think we're all going to be.
Because it could be that, for whatever reason, maybe the state is waiting for something, you know, for us to deliver something. Maybe we have it, we just haven't delivered it yet. I mean, whatever that is, right? So I agree. I think that's a real priority to find out what that gap may be, and if we have that available, let's produce it. If we need to get it or make other actions, let's put that as a priority.
Madam President.
Oh, sorry.
So in response to have we gone around on this, you know, whether we met the expectation or not, I think that it would be helpful if Montebello to the experts on your district write the draft response of where they're at with different levels of implementation, what was suggested in the bill of potential that worked with the board of media oversight. I think that would be helpful because they have more knowledge than we've given us. This was better. I remember the 1 year vet, I don't remember the May vet. I do remember when we voted it to the November 18th. I don't remember us vetting the information that was shared with the May 18th. So I think, or November 17th, but anyway, I think we should go back and revisit that with Montebello taking the lead in that response.
We'll definitely take care of
that. I believe that the response needs to come from us, given that we already know they're using ASAP. We can also cite, see, if we read number 32, then we can respond to not only Montebello, but clarify what we are doing as a consortium. Culver City and Burbank and Montebello use ASAP. LAUSD, what?
We use our SIS.
And then use SIS. LAUSD can indicate which system they use. I think that then puts number 32 to rest, because then we're indicating how we're addressing them.
Yeah, and my just point of clarification, I'm saying they take the first read and they're writing the first draft, we add to it, but I think it's important that we hear their voice in that as well.
Well, yeah, and you're actually referring to item 31 and more 32.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
So, an item on the agenda for March 15th.
Absolutely. One last thing. So, again, just reading it again. So, it looks like the pieces that we have to produce are policies, procedures regarding data collection, reporting of enrollment, attendance, and expenditure data. So if we have those in place, which I believe we do, then it should be, we have those in place. I guess it's just a case of, have we not seen them? Have we not produced those evidence pieces? But they're very clearly listed up there as those are the pieces they're looking for. Am I accurate?
The original interpretation was that those policies and procedures should be at the LEREC level. And the oversight should be taking place at the LEREC level. And that's what, you know, their original response indicated, that our responsibility was to develop those procedures. For that, to that effect, we hired the auditing firms so that they can help us develop those policies and procedures at the LEREC level, so that now that we have done so, and we are in the process of creating those policies and procedures, what they have requested in the past is to see those LEREC policies and procedures to be implemented as part of the responsibility.
But it would not be inappropriate, in my mind, to address a letter back to Ms. Howell and say, as of, you know, February 15, 2019, this is the progress we've made on item 32 and to the extent that we can item 31. Because what it shows is proactive, corrective action taking place over a period of time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, we've all been through these things. and sometimes it's just, I mean, a lot of us went through categorical program monitoring and still go through that. So it's really, in many cases, can be quite a simple process of, do you have a document that you share with staff that puts in writing what these things are? We all have it, I think, as individual districts. Maybe what they're looking for is we just need to put a LEREC logo on there. We all agree to it. The third-party auditor person obviously uses that as a guide for the work we're doing. And I just think it's kind of like problem solved. I think we should try to tie it up in that way as quickly as possible, because it seems like there's a disconnect between what we're actually doing and if we are in compliance in many respects versus the state's perception of us not being compliant,
which I understand, and we will certainly draft the letter with whatever steps have been taken up until now. We'll work with Montebello to do that. We will bring it to the next open meeting for your review, and actually we will send it to you prior to the meeting for your review, and then hopefully for approval and implementation.
Thank you very much.
Professional development. That's next on my agenda. Dr. Mullen,
So I was asking an update on the STEP system, and I talked to Mark Neal, I believe she's probably supporting that function. Thank you.
Again, Adrienne Mullins for the record, giving an update on the status report of the Special Development Framework and the STEP system. So, in the framework, the Counseling Collaborative will meet, but we're going to meet after, and we're going to meet regards to the STEP implementation.
So I talked to Garfield today, the literacy pro, who's creating that pilot for us and has written the framework. He would like to do a program review with the point people. He's available, and I know we're meeting on Thursday this week, so he can even meet with us Thursday. He'll be in the area. And then we need to do a final review on that, a beta test. The goal is to have a pilot roll out March 15th to the group, to the districts that are participating in that. So we will work with the point people to create that opportunity to look at that. Counseling Collaborative will review that testing after the point people do it. So that way they can be aware of that. We're going to do it in January. We moved that meeting because of the strike within LUSD, and that was a large member district that did not participate. So we will move it to a Friday after the point people. So it'll probably be the next couple weeks.
Or if not Friday, but we're having all of the action at TV.
It'll be after March 15th. Okay. Or it could be in the afternoon. Usually they meet in the afternoon anyway. So it could still happen. So, that's really the update on professional development. I know Elvis and Unita are giving an update on data and accountability. The PLCs have been rescheduled. We moved them to accommodate the 3-year planning, which I will give you an update on that in a later part of the agenda. But the PLCs have been rescheduled for April and May. And we'll have information coming out to the member districts about that so they can pull together teams to participate in that training.
Can you pass it over to you?
And Yanira. Good afternoon, everyone. So this is an update on the data and accountability work group. I apologize, I don't have any handouts because we just met yesterday, late afternoon. And I had a Valentine's Day with my four-legged friend, so we went for a long walk. So just a couple of updates. I will have printouts and handouts in here, but hopefully sooner than later. We did do a quick update in terms of the CAPE program areas. The workforce reentry was redefined just to align it with the state reporting requirements. It's now more of a CTE and workforce readiness instruction of population rather than before it used to be flagged for all programs. So now it's specific to CTE and workforce readiness. So if you see that change in your CAPE summary report, that is the reason. The next item was we finished up on barriers to employment. As usual, there's a lot of, the definitions are kind of difficult. We agreed on most items. There was one particular item we're going to do more research on, and that was the definition of low levels of literacy. So we're gonna work on that because it does, if I may read the definition, it says participants are able to read, write, speak in English, and communicate and solve problems proficiently to function on the job or in the society. So we're kinda having trouble with that in terms of agreeing as a worker, but we're gonna do some more research and then we're gonna hopefully come up with some kind of answer to that. We also sort of brainstormed on success metrics. I wanted every district to sort of share what they thought was a good measuring stick in terms of success, something that can be quantified. So in no specific order, I'm going to go ahead and give a list here. Certain items were like course completion, transitions went from one program to another or to a different, to the college, for example. Job placement, HSC completers, enrollment, attendance, meaning persistence, CDCP completion certificates, transitions from non-credit to credit, case summary, outcomes, employment, innovation, field civics, payment points, VOA metrics, and counting. So those are just some ideas. Like I said, we just presented ideas. There was no, we didn't come to agreement or do anything else aside from that. But it's sort of a good idea to see where everyone stands in terms of what they think is a success metric. Do you want to add anything?
I have one question, and that is, did the workforce reentry change
the program areas, so there's still, because I know what you're doing at work, there's 7 program areas. Workforce reentry was 1 program area. Did the state remove it as a program area, or?
No, it's not removed. It's still there. It's just the way it was showing up on the report, it was flagging all kinds for ESL, ABD, and else. But it was always meant to be specific to CTE 55 and above, and so that's what they finally fixed.
Yeah, just a couple questions. So what it sounds like the work is in the group is discussions around how to define certain populations, how to define, you know, how we collect certain things. I'm just wondering how is that process being, you know, validated or coordinated with the guidance that the state is publishing on those issues? And then the second piece is, too, kind of around the vein of efficiency, right? So, like, when we get staff together, we really want to maximize the time and be strategic about some of those key, maybe, work products. We're getting some good minds together around the table. We want to maximize that effort. So given the recent discussion regarding, you know, data and accountability issues, conformity, standardization with regard to how we collect and report data, which is obviously a hot topic, I'd like to suggest that, you know, maybe as part of your work, we think about, you know, is there, because I know other consortia have actually published data and accountability guidance documents as part of their consortium. So, like, when we talk about it all dead, you know, we have the same jargon and lingo, right, at school A as we do in school B or C, right? So I'd like to throw that out there as maybe something that maybe we, as we incorporate in the next 3-year cycle, what might be some key strategic deliverables we really want to see out of the data and accountability work group?
I agree, and I think for Adrienne, a crosswalk to the differences between the community college data and what the high schools need to report might be helpful for everybody. Does that make any sense? I mean, because our reporting is somewhat different in some cases, right?
It is. Well, it's new this year that we're reporting from MIS. We do still do TE, we just don't test all of our sections, and so that's why the community colleges push back into doing MIS data, because it's more, they have a clear narrative of what our story is. But I don't know that, well, I'll look at it.
When I'm thinking, and I know enough to be dangerous sometimes, so please accept that. No, all the time. I think if there is a side-by-side chart that says this is what K-12 has to do, this is what community college has to do, it might be an illuminating piece of information people to get it. Because, I mean, there's similarities and there are some differences as well.
I agree. I mean, I think that type of work product can be really helpful for working with staff, particularly. So when we're talking about a lot of times apples, oranges, and kumquats, we can line it all up and really talk more apples to apples. I also want us to be careful about, you know, when we're trying to define various programs, populations, students, I'd like us to be aligned with the federal and state existing definitions versus trying to create maybe other, you know, versions of what the state or the feds have already said, you know, basically indicated in terms of, hey, here are the metrics, here's the population, here's how it's defined, here's how you can measure it, versus, you know, maybe other discussions that aren't quite as productive.
Yeah, I just want to add that it is my understanding, and Adrienne hopefully will second it, that the state is creating a crosswalk between the reporting requirements on MIS and TE, because I think that was something that was brought up during the work groups, and I believe that they decided that would be one of the activities that they were doing.
Yeah, but they're different elements completely. You know, TE is measuring adult literacy gains, or MIS looks at different elements based on demographics and but differently. I think we'll look at it and see what the common thread is and where we need to go from there.
I think, you know, anywhere else looks extensive, looks good. Your idea needs to be
injured. You're injured.
Right. So work on it and see.
I will definitely put my head into this and
right.
figure it out. Okay.
Thank you.
I think another just possibility in terms of both the data and accountability work group and the PD framework is, and maybe this would might be helpful, is how do we align what you're doing, use and kind of use the same dashboard thing that we're using for the other stuff, just to give us a sense of that, or that's one, or the other piece is, how does that, the work that you're doing with that fit into the new direction with 3-year planning. So I don't know that I even asked the question. I think
we're trying to align a lot of things that the widgets weren't built to be aligned at this point.
Yeah.
And so I think there's an evolution that happens. I mean, this framework is relatively new. We created a framework that's fluid, right? So it can bend or grow where we need it to grow. And it will change based on the needs of the consortium. So I think that's going to happen automatically. It's not a rigid framework. It's intentionally called a framework because, you know, it's a frame around Larry. It's not married in any way that we approach something. It's fluid in the sense that it's going to move according to what we need.
But it's not going to operate separate from this whole priority that we created called professional development, right?
It happened at this point, so I don't see it would do that.
Right. And so I see those two things kind of being a natural match, right? I don't know where the data and accountability work group and the work around that discussion in the other areas, but we know we talked, but metrics was on there, and somehow metrics didn't get in there as a priority. So I'm just...
Data accountability is part of the professional framework. We created it for the reason that Mr. Stark shared, and you know, one of the reasons is to make sure that we have a common language that's across districts. We learned that today just within our 3-year planning. Integrated planning means one thing in our district, means something very different across, right? But we want to come up with a common definition. It certainly will match whatever the state or federal definitions are. WIOA, for example, which is a driver in the metrics of adult ed, not the only driver, but definitely a driver, you know, have federal definitions. And it's also the legislative definitions of the AB 104. So all of that comes together, and they are coupled, right, between all of those different things that just described. So it will still be coupled with professional development. Now, we also talked about earlier that there's professional development that will be large-scale to meet a large need. We're also going to have targeted professional development and data accountability as part of that, because that's a focused group that's going to lead that effort within their individual district and then come back to the consortium as a whole. Data accountability is one example of that. We may have something that's a very specific best practice that's CTE and a very specific scope. That would be another example of a targeted professional development.
But that's actually going to be developed by the groups that's not already in place, right? That's going to be part of the development of the plan. I guess my question was, I see the PD fitting into one of the goals that we look, you know, created in priorities. And I see the value and importance of the data and accountability and metrics and all of that. I'm just wondering where that fits in with what we just talked about. I think it's important to fit in.
I think it will.
Okay.
I think, you know, we have to, I think what we learned today through the process, I don't know if people really thought when we were starting out the, I guess we can go into the 3-year planning.
So Dr. Mullen, the 3-year plan.
That, you know, we went through the assessment piece, right? From that assessment process, you know, self-assessment, we were able to narrow down. You would have thought, looking at those 30 items at the beginning at 9:30, that by 12:30 we would have three kind of focus areas. So I think we have to trust the process going forward. I think it will answer a lot of the questions that you are bringing up. So I really feel like it will go forward. And if it doesn't, that's where that gap is from March 15th to the time we have to send it into the state to address areas that we didn't see come forward that we feel are important as a consortium. and maybe the data and accountability maybe doesn't rise in professional development, or maybe we see it rise as another area that we need to develop and focus, have one of our areas of focus. I think there's still an opportunity for that. So just to recap quickly, because I kind of jumped from A to Z and I forgot all the letters in between. Three areas of focus came out of today's morning innovation lab, which was professional development, pathways, as well as student success and support. Under those areas, we broke up into three groups and people development further. What will happen next week, and we'll start in this room, and then we'll have breakout rooms in the classrooms that we have in this building to support it. We will dive deeper into each of those areas over the next three Fridays, and on March 15th will be the summit, which the three groups will come back together, share, and everyone is invited who wants to come and participate, as well as the work group members that will be there. The action planning groups is what they're called. We'll come back and share what they've learned and what they want to see rise, and then we will determine if that's where we go. We'll endorse it at that point or add to it if we see a glaring difference. And each district of that has been 3 to 4 people to participate in that process over the next 4 weeks. Okay,
thank you.
Thank you.
On me and Sophia, I don't have any. So, conference update.
Good afternoon, everyone. Conference update. We have over 300 attendees registered already, and 27 workshops. And we will have 14 exhibitors with about 20 tables. The next conference, next year's conference, will be on March 14th. 2020.
So that's the recommendation for next year's conference, because we want to start it ASAP, as soon as possible, not the system. it's because the vendors, they need to pencil it in. And, it's really exciting because we have 300 this year at this time. Last year we had 150 registration. And we have put people on the wait list because this conference is getting out of this world. So anyways, if you guys, go back to your member district, just spread the word, ask them to register. And we have some really exciting stuff planned for this conference.
Thank you. I just want to add to that, just in case you get to hear some of the things that we're doing. We're actually giving, this is a professional development for LEREC members. And so we're giving priority to LEREC staff members to attend the conference, right? So what that means is that some of the vendors, some of the partners, we have asked them to join a waiting list, and at the end, once we evaluate that all of the LEREC members that wanted to attend have had an opportunity to register and attend, then we will see if other stakeholders that wish to participate can participate.
Thank you. So the next item is an information discussion item. This is me. They told me I can't go stand back there, so I'm going to do that here. If you could look at the item in your packet, it's under 4.1.
Page 25 of the packet.
Okay, somebody did something to this computer to not log on. So, first, let me start by explaining why I added this to the agenda. So I didn't mean to send anybody spinning, but from my perspective, all the discussions that we've had or we've been having about funding, we've been having about funding from last year when Montebello made the adjustment to their funding as a result of the audit, through this year's discussions, including the urgency to have a funding workshop, and then on top of it, having another one. All this gave me the impression that we would be implementing a new formula for 1920. And I've been patiently waiting for that help to bring a little more equity to all of the agencies. And the reality is every scenario that was presented from that redistribution from Montebello and all the scenarios that were presented at the funding research day, and even LAUSD's proposal, all showed a more equitable distribution to Culver City. So Saturday really was the very first time that I realized the concept of keeping funding the same for 1920 was even possible. And here's why it's a problem for Culver City. Because it's not the same for Culver City. So remember that the redistribution from Montebello, while it was for 17-18, didn't actually get distributed until the end of the year. So I included it in my budget for 18-19. And by the way, fully expecting that we would be developing a formula for 19-20 that would result in CCUSD being funded at a level that basic needs are running the school. The allocation we got as a result of that redistribution amount actually got us to that basic level. What I just wanted to show you was some of the stuff that I talked about at the meeting on Saturday when I was shocked a little bit. This list shows you what Culver City looks like, what we spend our money on, what our staffing looks like, what money we have to pay for that, and finally what our deficit is based on. So just on the based on the 1920 funding, which is the number plus the COLA. The other chart, just want you to know that it's just some of the stuff that I pulled, the allocation, the COLA, what that means, the enrollment numbers from TE that were presented in one of the charts already, and then kind of what that means in terms of the money available to spend for students in relation to everyone else. This is not at all the idea of a per pupil funding formula at all. And really the idea on the agenda, when Lance and I talked about the agenda that Monday, I was trying to figure out what exactly I was going to talk about. And so I think the idea that instead of funding formula was a misnomer, because that's not what this is about. So I'm sorry for any panic or confusion that caused. But what I am doing is I'm making an appeal to the consortium. Saturday, several people talked about the idea of thinking like a consortium. And I'm asking that we all put on our consortium hat and collaboratively come up with a solution that helps close that deficit for 1920. And that's why it says interim, right? And then it gives us time to work through what a full-fledged formula looks like for 2021. And I think the other thing I want you guys to know is that even if we get to a place where the consortium finds a way to close that gap or that deficit for some reason, and for some reason Culver City doesn't spend all of that gap money, then I would return it to the consortium, no question. It's not an intent to try to get anything to store, just so you know. I also want you to know that I'm not going to pink slip anyone. So I don't want that to be anybody confused about that. But what it does mean is that the support and safety that I've been promising staff and students, which finally got board approved, will not happen. We won't be able to do the very limited, successful summer school that we've done. We'll have to cut our supply material and equipment budget drastically. And we'll have to cut kind of our online student acceleration stuff and keep looking and wherever else that I need to cut, and these impact these services. And I get that everybody is in a similar situation in terms of needing the funding. So I'm asking to help close that gap and hoping that this discussion gets us to a place where maybe we can agree on something that goes
to a vote next time or the time after that. But this wasn't about me telling anybody how I think it should be done or where it should come from, but really just asking everybody what's possible and what's not possible. And you know, here's the other thing is that this is an opportunity for us to talk the talk, to walk the walk. We've been talking the talk about consortia and all that. But I think even that if that's a place that we can get to, then that puts us in a really good position to work together when we move forward to develop a complete 24 done. If you look at our staffing, I mean, we have one full-time teacher. One. Right? I wanted to show you because it's not... I wanted you to really see what we're working with. We're not working with, you know, a million people, a bunch of out-of-staff people, and everybody that has, believe me, I wish I could have a navigator. I wish I could have those things that I'm doing. We can't based on the size that we are, and that's no fault of anybody else. But I do want to say that the initial funding allocation was a result of a lot of negotiating and when I did that, by the way, I was on that team. When I did that and kind of gave in places just so we could get to a place to move forward. So I'm open to discussion where anything. I want us to be able to have that discussion about what are some possibilities.
Yeah, I've got a few questions. I mean, I think first, I totally understand and appreciate that we're shedding light on a problematic issue here that we've talked about for many years, which is the issue of justice and adequacy for adult education funding. I guess, you know, based on the last meeting, I thought there was, and again, I'm just going to, this is just my opinion, I'm not putting words in anybody's mouth. My opinion, based on the meeting, was, you know, there are, as Mr. Nelson spoke to, you know, we have timelines in terms of budget development that we have to meet. And, you know, if we're going to talk about whether it's a new formula, whether it's reallocation, those discussions have to happen on a timeline that's congruent with the way we do budget development in schools. And I just, that's my big concern is in terms of the timeline, not that your situation is not appreciated. I mean, LAUSD has had to make some really tough calls the last few months. We started budget development, as Ted said, in November. We've had to make some really difficult decisions. We're borrowing money from our own district that we have to pay back. We're not laying anyone off, but we are making reductions in temporary staff. We've cut our central office by 28%. Okay, those are big hits. So I would like us to talk about, you know, hey, if there's an interim solution we can come up with, I'm on board to discuss what that might be. But the problem with that discussion is it's a zero-sum game. It's this person needs this over here, where is it going to come from? Which means there's a winner and there's a loser. It comes at a cost. That's a zero-sum. You know, I think what this brings light to, what we discussed, I mean, at length last Saturday, was, yeah, how are we going to collectively address this issue at the state level? Because we can slug it out locally, like you just said. You know, 3-4 years ago, it was kind of a slugfest. And unfortunately, we have one district who sort of feels like, hey, you know what, I got sort of the short end of the stick on that. And I don't disagree with you. You know, so this is about more funding for adult ed. It's not just about Culver City. It's not just about L.A. We feel very passionate about this issue. But again, I don't know how much we can accomplish at this point given the limited resources that we're already, and unfortunately the state's kind of put us in a competitive situation at the local level, how do we not cannibalize each other, right, for lack of a better term. How do we really leverage our strength and our power as a consortium, given this region and the districts involved, to go up to the state and say, you know, we're sick of being underfunded. And I want to, and thank you, UTLA. I want to call out UTLA here, because they brought this conversation not only to the state level, but the national level. But unfortunately, what happens is, you know, there's a lot of focus on K-12, there's a lot of focus on community college. Adult ed gets left out many times. So I think this is our opportunity to join with our labor partners, with our big heavy hitters, our government relations, all hands on deck. Let's go to the state and say, we need funding to make, you know, what needs to happen, happen. We have the data, we have the outcomes. Everybody here knows the successes that we've had in this consortium. The students, the volume of students we're serving, all the transitions, the learning gains, all that stuff. We have that data. So we have to make the compelling case. And I think otherwise, if we don't do that, we're going to be here 3 years from now with limited funds and then quibbling and arguing with ourselves about where the funds should go. Because I, for one, I would cut a check to Culver City right now if I could. I really would. And I had the conversation with Mr. Nelson. And I said, can we do this? He says, you know, the problem we have, Joe, is that you're already borrowing money from your own district, and we're going to turn around and cut a check to Culver City. We can't do it. Unless I can be your AP over at Culver City. But my point is, I wish I had more flexibility, you know, to generate and ability to generate more revenue. But as it is, I mean, I know Parallel USD, we're scrapping and scraping, man. We're writing, accelerator grants. We're writing California Apprenticeship Initiative grants. We're trying to cash in on iTrain. We're boosting performance at our WIOA Title II. We're like juicing that orange any way we can, because we need every penny of that funding. And AEP is not enough. CAPE is not enough. And we need more. And so, that's my speech.
So, I agree with everything that my colleague said. I wanted to add a couple more items to it. So last Saturday we had a workshop, and we had a very robust discussion about budgets, and we had some significant meeting notes that several of us took, and I think that there's some forward motion that we can take as it relates to the things that Mr. Stark mentioned. So until we get the state associations, the unions, and everybody around the central theme that there just is not enough resources to support ABE, the goals and objectives that the state is telling us that we all need to support, we can argue over the crumbs that we get, but it's not going to solve a bigger issue at all. So I would agree that I think we need to put our time and effort into legislative action. You know, as I look at the, you know, I agree that the 19-20 budgets are just about put to bed. We certainly have been actively engaged in putting our budgets in the system. So it'd be very hard for us to go back and say, please, sir, we would like more. I asked Adrian and Ann in the work that we've done since last Saturday to try to figure out, well, if we get $7.9 million from the consortium, from LARIC, how much are we spending overall? And overall, we're investing almost $19 million in adult education. So there's a gap of $10, $11 million that is coming from a variety of other sources, districts, WIOA, other places. In the case of Culver City, you know, so you've got a $355,000 gap there, so you're going to have to either cut that, if you indicated you would, or find other sources of local income, wherever it might be, to fill this gap, at least for now. Joe and I talked earlier about 3.4%, the 3.46%, which is the COLA for next year. And COLAs are like sacred cows. You know, they have to be given to the entities. We couldn't, college. I think last Saturday I advocated for possibility that Montebello wouldn't get their COLA last time. I said that might be a possibility, but the more that I thought about it, no, that's not fair. Every entity should get their COLA. That's what cost of living allowance is for. Whether or not there's a reduction on the aggregate amount in some other means, that's a discussion for another day. But COLAs are COLAs are there for a reason. And often COLAs go to salary increases. So just to kind of wrap it up here, I think our efforts should be towards legislation. I don't know if any other district has looked at the situation the same way that Culver City has. I don't think having a down and dirty discussion among us, fight over the money is really going to be helpful here. There's some raw data down at the bottom of this chart that talks about enrollments and dollars per student, all those kind of things. You can rank that if you care to, and maybe that shows a basic need to take a look at something. But I think the 1920 situation is pretty much locked in.
Just so you know, the intent was not for
people to fight.
That was not.
That there's an additional component that those of us that have CTE deal with, and that is the cost for materials, equipment, and supplies for these programs is very expensive. And additionally, which the state did not look into, I'm pretty sure if I asked me if it wasn't a thought, is that in implementing IET, if you're going to put that together, now you're talking about, if you're going to do it right anyway, at some point in time, you've got some additional staff costs there, whichever route you choose to do it. And our route was to team teach. So that's another factor there in terms of what Mr. Stark was talking about, that we need to bring to the forefront of any of the policymakers at the state level with regards to allocation, that are things that are not always considered when they come up with these ideas, especially for IET.
I just add one more quick thing. I'm always reminded that adult education was defunded to the tune of almost 50%. Correct.
Well, in LAUSD, it was defunded, period. It came back at a rate of about 25% of what it was previous to the cut, I believe.
But the state of California, in aggregate, cut the adult ed funding in half, I thought, right? A few years ago. That's the source of the problem. And on top of that, we're all expected to do more. So it's time to march on the Capitol in some form or fashion.
Well, just to comment on everything that transpired on Saturday, what has been discussed today, and what we had as part of the family, remember what we said, I said we need to put every dollar in driving success for our students, developing new and innovative programs, but getting them to a place where they need to invest. So my question is, in regards to Culver City, the deficit of $355,858, what was this, the increase is due to, what did you add to this budget that you were anticipating?
What do you mean, what did I add to the budget?
What were you anticipating? Because you said projected deficit. So is it existing programs that you were just trying to maintain, or were you adding?
So when we got the money that came from Montebello originally, right?
Yes.
Took us to about this 2.2 million, and then all the formulas matched that. So this plan is based on that. That was for this year. And to continue. So what I don't like, the assistant principal, that just got approved,
right? So campus security, we're in the process of finishing that. But there's nothing, I talked to Henry Fimbris about doing a campus security class. That's all of 24 hours total. So it's not, you know, it's not $354 of additional stuff. Here's the thing. I put our situation out there for that conversation. And like I said in the beginning, if all the budgets were locked down for 1920, then I don't understand the sense of urgency around all those funding conversations. So I must have not been at that meeting. I must have been at a different meeting. So if what it is, if what we're saying, because this is what I'm hearing, yes, we have to go legislatively to get more money from the state for all of that stuff. And, but right now what we're saying is... we're not expanding, we're not doing that stuff, we're going back, and I've got to figure out. I got it.
So with that, I wanted to add something.
Yes.
We did indicate that Montebello, as part of the LERIC, would like to work with the whole LERIC family, so he needs to make adjustments. We'll make adjustments. So that's our commitment, because we want to work together and move forward. Okay?
If they got lost in translation, so I know you highlighted it, it's just not on this sheet, the main fact sheet. What was the amount that you subsidized your budget from your district, which you don't have access to? That's an important number. I think the other number that we can look at, what we talked about in this process, is really looking at all of the member districts, but also the LERIC office and its structure. So maybe we have a commissioner that we have not rehired, and maybe that is something that we can look at just, you know, existing in that process. So I think everything is, you know, is up for conversation. I guess it's a courageous conversation, which I think you're bringing forward. But I think what's important is for me to understand what your district can help you with, which they no longer have the ability.
Yeah, just to tag on. So back in December, I remember we were kind of first looking at this, and we had LERIC staff providing them a lot of different options and scenarios. And one comment I made, I remember, before we started looking at what a particular scenario might look like for a student, maybe one of my questions was, well, what do we want it to be, too? Like, let's not get so focused on, you know, as kind of Bob's saying, you know, examining the crumbs here at the local level, but what do we really want it to look like? So it's kind of getting to what Emilio's saying. What do we want the formula to be, right? Because I don't think there's enough money locally to really do justice to the quality of the programs that we want to offer, whether that's IET, Career Tech Ed, which are both resource-intense programs, if you want to do them right, as Emilio said. If you want to do a half-assed program, then that's a different story, but that's not what we're about. So I think the urgency, well, I can say from LAUSD's perspective, there was an urgency for us. But it was very clear that I think as we were examining proposals, again, in my opinion, there just wasn't quite the consensus, maybe, and I admit, you know, I may have misread some of the comments that were made, and there really wasn't quite maybe the consensus around, or, you know, crystallization of, and here's what we do about it, right? Because we all know what the problem is. The issue becomes, if we're going to take action, there has to be a very specific proposal on the table that we're taking action about. You know, so and that's the part where I think there was an urgency from my point of view, but given where we are at this point in the budget process, I think in some ways, at least in LAUSD's case, we've sort of accepted the fact that we have what we have and we're going to live to fight kind of another day and regroup and, you know, sort of look at this in terms of next budget cycle.
Can you clarify the amount, because I don't know that amount that you're
interested in? I don't have that one.
Okay.
I have to go back. I tried to go into those. It was before I got LACO reports, which were dynamic, that I could pull the specific things. I can find that one.
So,
but
there are reasons why there is a feeling of urgency, and that feeling is very legitimate, and that is because 1920 is frankly, it's done. What we're looking at is 2021, but it's not just the five of us sitting here. Each one of us has, we're not the last person on that totem pole. We have to report to people. In K-12's case, it's called the superintendent, who needs to know exactly what's going on. And there are board members that are also interested, and associations that are interested. So there is urgency, and it needs to start now for 2021. There's no way that we could possibly have implemented something for 1920. But the urgency is, this is the right time. This is the perfect time. If, in fact, we're looking at 2021 to propose a new distribution formula to have this, because these people need to be reported to in terms of what's being discussed and what's being considered. So that's extremely important. The other thing is that we've had to make sacrifices. I don't talk on a personal basis about me, but what you see is what you get. I don't have an assistant principal. So I'm having to even come in on Saturdays and work on Saturdays. I do that knowing that that is going to allow me to offer maybe some other programs in some other areas. Plus, we've had to cut CTE programs that frankly weren't cutting the mustard, either as demonstrated by enrollment or by the product that was being produced. And I had to say to those instructors, and those tough conversations, but I'm sorry, we're not going to continue to include your program in our master schedule, because there's not the need there for it, or the quality and the enrollment. So there are tough decisions you can make. I am sympathetic to your case. I don't want to sound like I'm not. But I'm just letting you know that we had to make tough decisions.
So, Larry's legislative agenda.
We just went through it. More funding.
Well, but I think the idea is the next. Yeah, what are the next steps for that? Because I think we talked about that being a board workshop.
Well, I'm just going to jump in. So, because I know that there's a couple, I think as a board, we have to kind of decide. Is there maybe one or two things that as a LARIC, we understand five different districts, there's all kinds of other priorities, and certainly in LAUSD. But in terms of that one adult, maybe what's that one adult ed piece that we're all going to carry, but we can't just go to Sacramento and say we want more money, right? It's everybody. So can we go to Sacramento with a message around adequacy of funding, with basically the data here saying, here's how we're effective, here's how we've done, here's how we've come together in the last 3 years to do adult ed better, adult ed 2.0 better, you know, bigger and better, right? And with what we want to do to meet the mandates that are required, college career for all, right? Here's what it's going to take to get there. And let's put it to Sacramento, we have to give them a proposal, and kind of put it in their face, because I think just going up and asking for more funding, I'm not sure that we're going to get a very positive result. But I know, and again, UTLA working closely with LAUSD, there's very specific proposals that they're working hand in hand with the superintendent and board members on, and I think from my point of view, I'd love to see us attach an adult ed funding piece to that agenda. So I think it's kind of up to us to decide, well, what do we want that adult ed piece? Specifically, what do we want that to be?
So, to tag on to that, you know, we have these two major state associations. They have a lobby. Maybe what we could do is request a meeting with their leadership and their lobbyists, where we could put in front of them what the largest consortium's legislative goals are, and challenge them to say, okay, what are you going to do about that? And what can we do to help you with that? Certainly, LACCD and LAUSD have government relations activities, including lobbyists. I've actually lost track of the number of lobbyists we have these days. We've got a bunch of them. In our situation, I know that our chancellor and our board would be very supportive of adding. We've got two, if you will, adult education non-credit goals right now in our legislative agenda, including the funding of non-credit faculty as part of what's known as the faculty obligation number, as well as getting our adult ed programs funded at the same full rate as credit to include them in the other two buckets of the funding formula. So we've got them there, okay? But we've got these two state agencies, and they represent everybody in the state, and I don't know why we don't work with them. Certainly, UCLA, which is a very powerful voice right now, we had a person with us last Saturday. We should all rally, you know, basically throw all our resources together, including in LACCD's case, we have over 50 elected officials in our district, you know, across 900 square miles. And, you know, there's some clout there. We need to marshal it.
So I guess my question is, what are the next steps? Because I think we've already talked about, you said that before. So do we need a workshop? Do we need to say, because I can't imagine going to those people without us having to come up with something.
I'm happy to participate in a workshop. And I think we had enough conversation that we could probably have staff, you know, come up with a list of five or six priorities, or three or five, and send those around. If we like, I don't know if we need to spend any more hours on it. I want to hear from the people who are charged with the responsibility of supporting adult education in the state, which are associations and the lobbyists that they employ to help us. I want strategies. I want to know. I mean, Matthew was here with us last week. He had, you know, I'm rambling.
I agree. I think, and there are some existing proposals I know that are already in progress. So one is around funding, a particular state funding formula for adult ed. And it sounds very similar to what the community college is proposing around FTES for adult ed. So can we merge the two? Can we tag on to that? You know, again, we already kind of have that already in development. So I think any number of us who are part of those organizations could bring that in. Let's bring in that proposal.
So as an outsider, one of the things that I think was very effectively done by UTLA was their message this time around. Their message was spot on, it was consistent, and they were able to back it up with data and information. Having been a K-12 guy for most of my career, I'm surprised and how differently adult ed does things. And one of the things that I think we do need to look at is the quality of the message that gets up to our legislators by our two largest organizations. We don't want to go up there and say we need more money, but what we do need to bring to their attention is the extra things that have been put on our plate for which we have to deal with the same amount of money that we've had for several years now. Whether it's data and accountability. Some of us have had to hire additional staff to take care of that. Whether it is the IET programs. Whatever these things are, we've been asked to do more these ideas roll out, they cost money. Those are the kinds of things that we need to maybe put out a statement, a letter as a consortium to them, the largest one, and bring it to their attention. You've asked us to do this and this and this, and simply there is not enough money. We've implemented these things on our own at great sacrifice, but we need the dollars in order to do these things with fidelity and effectively.
So, thinking back about 5 years ago, when I was the 14, 15 months, I was the interim superintendent, president of Pasadena City College, and we had a very large adult education program, large in comparison to the other entities in our area. And that's when the state cut back the funding. And the excuse that they gave for cutting back the funding is that they're investing 100%, whatever that number was right now, and they were not getting the results that they wanted to. Therefore, they're going to cut it back. So we've all been proving, as little did I know some years later I was going to be involved at the level on that, but over the last 3 or 4 years, we have shown, you know, decided improvement in terms of outcomes and performance. It seems to me that we can go back as a system now to the legislature and say, okay, we heard you, we took the cut, now we're doing better, now we need some of that recovered. And in an FTS or an ADA-based formula that values adult education to the same level it values K-12 and quote-unquote credit education is the way to go. So I agree, and we could develop the data, we could, you know, develop whatever, but it's time to move a righteous indignation with those associations and lobbies saying, what are you doing for? I'll get off my soapbox now.
And just a clarification, I don't need to, I promise. The LARIC staff have an idea of what's next? I'm still not sure.
I think that there are many ideas in the pot, right? And so if it pleases the board, one of the things that the LARIC office can do is, again, listen very carefully to this conversation and also read the minutes from previous meetings and try to distill perhaps three elements that we can contribute to for your evaluation. For, you know, we can also, as a group, we can interview each one of you to find out specifically what you would like to see as part of this process.
Okay, so I don't need to be interviewed. I think you know pretty much where I am on this, but I would say that given the conversations that we've had, staff can within relatively easily develop those 3 or 4 items and get them around the point. What I would like to see between now and the next meeting is someone reaching out to those associations and saying, we want this meeting, we want it now. Whether we go to them or they come to us, we want to talk to them, we want to know what they're planning, we want to know how we can help. And, you know, we want to know what is happening. And, by the way, we're the largest consortium in the state, but my guess is other consortia would be more than happy to jump on this bandwagon. If in fact, and for all we know, this is already going on and we're just not even informed about it, right? But so what we need to be in the conversation, and we need to rally around it, because fighting amongst ourselves for the crumbs we have is not the answer.
Dr. Wallen?
I really encourage you, I mean, you have a board member here, former city does, but reaching out to your board members. I sat in a board seat at one point in a school district, and it makes a huge difference to carry that agenda forward as board members. I mean, there's ways that they're with our elected officials, that they're elected officials as well, that can reach out in a way that we can't reach out necessarily. So you have to get to hear one of those board members. So,
What is the, I guess, what is our unified message or platform?
Well, I mean, I think each of you have I think we can come up with a unified message, but each of you have an individual story. Your individual story, you have a gap.
Right, but I thought we're talking from a state.
I think you do both.
So I'm just going to put this in.
You need lobby at your local level, and you need a lobby at the state level. I mean, it's a tightly coupled.
All right. So I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but we have. I'm going to out people. No, but we have folks in the room who are part of and state leaders in these organizations, right? So one of them is like CAIA, CCAE, right? So there's a proposal right now that they're both jointly working on, okay? What we don't know, what I don't know, is has UTLA seen it, right? Has the community college seen it? Because here's the thing, whatever we propose, everybody, if we're going to make it work, we're going to have to carry the same message. Because what happens is, you know, we put something, not me personally, but a proposal is put forward, and then folks want to kind of take their own sort of Frankenstein version of it, right? And then, unfortunately, then there's not a unified message to Sacramento. It gets sort of lost in the cacophony, right? So my recommendation is let's look at the existing proposal, let's vet it with our stakeholders, and let's bring it forward. And, you know, obviously we want to have the community college look at it, we want to have UTLA review it, all the districts, whoever the big heavy hitter stakeholders are, our superintendents, our board, all that, let's see if that's something we can work on and get some traction. Because we're going to have to obviously hit the ground running between now and May, if we want to impact 1920. So that's one idea. Throwing out there.
So as a board member of CCAE, I can get that proposal to everybody.
And I think we need to outline. It's kind of like guided practice a little bit, where we need to outline for them what these issues are. Because if we don't do it, then it doesn't get communicated quite the same way. There are additional costs that we're all taking on regarding counseling costs, teacher staffing costs, equipment costs, operational costs. If we start running classes on Saturday because there's a need there, where are those dollars coming from? So these are the things that need to be outlined for them to be aware of where these additional costs are being put forth.
Who's them?
The legislators, right?
CCAE, the other one, you know, all these alphabet soup organizations that we have out there, we need to bring them to the table and let them know. I have to tell you, one of the statements that Matthew, I forget his last name, Kogan brought forth, and it really resonated with me. I'm not going to say it as well as he did, but I am not impressed with some of the lobbying efforts by these two organizations. And we've got to let them know that. It's got to be ratcheted up. We're in the 21st century.
Yeah, I agree. And just kind of amen to what Emilio said, but also our message cannot be, because I've heard around the state through some of these organizations, and I'm not quite sure, we're not going to get anywhere with backfill, right? We need more funds to backfill what we had, blah, blah, blah. That's dead on arrival, okay? Our message needs to be, as Emilio is saying, this is not your father's adult ed. This is adult ed 2.0. This is IET. This is guided pathways. This is all the new and innovative stuff that's happening. This is integrated counseling. This is individualized student plans. We need to put those things on the table because those are not business as usual. And it's not just about opening up new classes. Okay, that's not what it's, I mean, it's partially that. We do need more services and classes, but it's also the way we're doing adult ed now is qualitatively different than the way we did it even a few years ago. So I think that should be our message beyond just the backfill and, you know, hey, woe is us, we had a big chunk taken out of us and all this. It's how are we doing adult ed now that's better, faster, stronger than of yesteryear, and what is it going to take to push it even further? That should be our message.
I'm sorry, but this is, Joe just brought some more thoughts. We are not doing marketing. the same way that we did 5 and 6 years ago. Because the people that we serve do not respond to the type of old-fashioned marketing tactics that we did before. So now we've had to go into social media. That's got to be maintained. There's a number of different factors here that they need to know. I hadn't even listed that. But these ideas that come out are great, but they do have a cost to them, and we need to outline that to them. Because we are not, you know, there's no dust gathering on our feet, that's for sure.
Okay. We're going to move to the end.
We have no action item. No action item.
So are we having a workshop?
I'm not sure. I'm hearing we need one, and then we don't need one.
Well, I agree with what Bob said. We need to get those lobbyists, whoever they are, those folks, they need to come to us, and they need to hear what we have to say.
And it's a workshop. That would be the workshop, right? We know what we want to say to them, and you guys can come up with a list of 3 to 5 or whatever, but I didn't pay dues to this thing, and I'm probably embarrassed that I don't. But they need to come down and see us, or we need to talk to them, and we need to jump on board. Joe, that's right. We need to jump on board whatever the state agenda is, and help them push it over the goal line.
From the LAIR office perspective, then we can actually officially reach out on behalf of the consortium to maybe try and schedule something that is mutually agreeable to all of us, so that we can then personally present some of the issues that have been brought up.
Yes. No, not yet.
I think what we can do, we can carry the agenda to our lobbyists through our, in my case, through my chancellor, and work that way. I also know that we, as Adrian mentioned, we have board members who would be very happy to get on board with this. Very happy. So I would do that. And, you know, to the extent that it's a conference call for some of them, as many of them as possible who can join us in the conversation, we'd like to talk.
Okay.
So, board member sections. You guys have a lot to say. Because it's 404 now. Corbett? Any board reports?
You know, I did, but given the time here, it can wait till our next meeting.
I'll yield my time as well. Thank you.
Melody Lipsky? Montebello?
Yes, I will yield it to you.
Well, we're yielding it to nobody. No consent item. Okay. The next meeting is Friday, March 15th. We are adjourning this meeting to February 15th at 4:05 p.m. Long is freaking meeting.
I'm going to take that.
Yeah. You know, it was really, wasn't the